Hi, Manny Hoffman here, CEO of PTEX Group. As you may know, our mission at PTEX is to help growing businesses flourish, and the Let's Talk Business podcast is one of the ways we're doing just that. Our vision since day one, over 20 years ago, has been that every business leader who had a breakthrough aha moment can experience the thrill of bringing that moment to life. We see ourselves as partners in that journey, not just service providers. We know it takes courage and grit to keep your business moving forward, especially right now. And we invest our heart and soul in helping you create more meaningful connections with your customers and drive business growth. So whether you want to launch a new product or service, gain more market share, or give your existing business a fresh new look, we'd love to hear what your goals are and how we can improve your bottom line. Learn more about our divisions and services at ptxgroup.com/services. If you want to get in touch with me directly, just text podcast to 718-831-6866.
Welcome to the Let's Talk Business podcast. Fresh insights for turning ambition into action, blunders into breakthroughs, and passion into profits. Here's your host, Manny Hoffman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Let's Talk Business podcast, the podcast for no-nonsense advice to help you learn, grow, and lead.
Today's guest is Kristen Putnam Walkerly.
She is a trusted advisor to the world's leading philanthropists. For over 20 years, ultra-high net worth donors, foundations, Fortune 500 companies, celebrity activists, and wealth advisors have sought her advice to transform their giving and maximize their impact. She was also named one of America's top 20 philanthropy speakers for the past 3 years, and also a great author of multiple books on philanthropy and giving. In our interview, Chris and I discuss what trends are we seeing now during the pandemic and in general this year, philanthropy giving away a lot of money. We also speak about what's important for a foundation when they decide giving away a large amount of money. We also discuss, as an organization or somebody that's passionate about a cause, how to position their nonprofit in order to be able to be attractive for those nonprofits foundations to be able to get some of that money. So this is a great interview, not the typical leadership, but ultimately, as we all want to be able to make a lot of money, but ultimately make the world a better place, this is a great interview. Without further ado, here is my interview. Chris, thank you so much for joining me on the Let's Talk Business podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So for our listeners, they're used to listening to leadership conversations, culture conversations, financial conversations, how to be a better, you know, have a healthier business and stuff like that. But today we're doing a little different. And the reason why we connected is you teach all about philanthropy and about giving and both sides on the side of managing, you know, you manage for people, you know, philanthropists for so many years, but ultimately also part of, you know, the foundations / organizations and everything we want to discuss. So before we start, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your past history.
Sure. Well, I'm president of Putnam Consulting Group, and I advise primarily philanthropists. So this means high net worth, ultra high net worth donors, leaders of grant-making foundations and corporate giving programs, really, you know, family foundations, corporate foundations, community foundations all over the world. And I help them in three areas. One is to increase the clarity of their work, so what they're trying to accomplish with their giving. The second is to increase the impact of their giving so that, you know, at the end of the day, you want to know that you're making a difference. And the third is to increase the joy that they experience in giving, so that they feel fulfilled in their philanthropic journey.
Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that we cover both sides of the coin, which is obviously a little bit of the understanding of what goes into a decision-making process of somebody, their family that's wealthy or a foundation that has the funds to actually contribute to society. And then obviously we also want to discuss a little bit about, you know, those nonprofits. You know, there's a saying that I use a lot. I heard it once from an executive director of a large nonprofit. And he told me, Manny, the only difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit is the, you know, the tax code, how the IRS literally writes the, you know, the tax return. Other than that, it's really run as a business, which means it needs to have the full, you know, the vision of the organization and the and the reach and who they're going after and so on and so forth. We'll get into it. But let's first speak about, you know, the donors, the foundations. And what could you share from your past experience? What goes into such a decision-making process when if somebody decides to write that big check or give that commitment of a large donation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say what should go into it is, again, attaining that clarity as to, you know, what you want to accomplish and what causes are meaningful to you and the kind of impact you want to have. So, you know, it doesn't matter really if you're a billionaire or you are, you know, you have $1,000 to give away. You know, you want to first think about what is meaningful to you, what's happening in the world around you or in your community where you want to make a difference. And that could be because you have a personal experience with heart disease or mental health in your family or something. You want to make an impact, or it could be because, you know, things you learn about in the world around us, like, you know, a global pandemic, for example, and you want to, you know, create change. And then you want to think about, well, what's the best way that I can do that? So, you know, first focus on your, what kind of impact do I want to have? What issues are important to me? And then you want to think about the how do I go about doing that? And certainly, you know, you're giving money away, but you want to think about to whom, you know, to what kinds of organizations, and how do you identify the organizations that you think are doing the best work or having the greatest impact? And even you want to think about, like, what's the right, I don't know, like intervention, if you will, to create that change. So for example, you know, pick any issue. Tell me, what's a passion or a cause that you care about?
Let's say teens at risk.
Teens at risk. Perfect. So, you know, there's all kinds of ways that you could help teens at risk. Quite frankly, you could start by providing them with preschool, high quality early childhood education, right? To make sure that they're prepared for kindergarten and can succeed and can read by third grade and have the supports they need so that they're not at risk as teenagers. But let's say they're teenagers today. Yeah, there's lots of ways you could approach that. You could think about from the education system, what's the likelihood that they're getting high quality education? And are they on track to graduate from high school? Do they need mentors? Is violence an issue? And how do you, you know, you could focus on violence prevention. So the point I'm trying to make is there's lots of hows in terms of how to do something or how to support something. And you want to think about what's the, you know, what are your options? What are some of the best practices? And what are the organizations who are really doing meaningful work so that you can support them?
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a follow-up question to that. So we constantly see, and we're going to get to the organization side in a moment, but we constantly see somehow organizations are able to convince, you know, a foundation or somebody that's looking to give away. And we see now a philanthropy in the world is pretty taking a huge, huge shift as far as, you know, billionaires giving away huge mm-hmm. chunks of their money. Question is, what are you seeing as trends? Are you seeing trends of those money going towards prevention, going to towards fixing a problem, going to, you know, redevelopment part? Like, what are you seeing from based on your experience, where the trends are, where is this money going in general?
Yeah, well, I'd say there's four main trends. I mean, certainly one, of course, is response to the pandemic. So there's been a, you know, tremendous growth in giving related to supporting food banks and making sure there's ample PPE and, you know, helping students who are and their families when they're suddenly, you know, forced to be educated from home with parents who are working or attempting to work. So there's lots of response, I'd say, in regards to response to the pandemic. And one of the ways that this is happening is through what's called rapid response funds. So in pretty much every community across the United States and increasingly around the world, there are groups of donors, companies, businesses, foundations coming together to create essentially kind of pooled funds so that anyone can donate to this fund. And then a group of, you know, seasoned professional philanthropists mm-hmm. are making decisions. You know, there's a single application process. Nonprofits can apply for funding. And then there's more of a coordinated way to disperse the funding across a community to make sure that all different kinds of needs are met. Because in a crisis, people tend to respond to kind of the immediate, like your sort of gut reaction or the most obvious need, which in often cases might be like a food pantry, a food bank, which is great because that's a need. But you don't want all the donors giving to a food bank and then no one remembering, oh gosh, we actually need to make sure that kids have access to high quality education, or what about preschool, or what about people who are in domestic violence shelters that now can't stay there anymore safely and have no place to go. So you want to make sure that there's a coordinated response to a crisis in a community, and these planned pooled funds can be really helpful. A huge trend is in funding in response to the police brutality and institutional racism that we've, you know, that's been going on for hundreds of years. But of course, we've seen has been risen to many people's attention after the murder of George Floyd in May and the racial reckoning that's been happening in this country since. And so there's been tremendous growth in giving around racial equity and racial justice in particular, you know, to the tune of, I believe between the beginning of June and sometime in September, there was about $6 billion raised by foundations in the U.S. to address racial equity, billion with a B. This is more than the past 11 years combined.
Wow.
Right. which is good. You know, it's really important. And hopefully that trend will continue. And a third trend, which is interesting, has been the extent to which donors and foundations and companies have removed restrictions on nonprofits to get the money to them more quickly and provide more flexible dollars to nonprofits, especially during this pandemic. And so by that, I mean, you know, what typically happens is a donor, you know, allocates a grant and then puts lots of restrictions on it. You know, you can use it for this program, but not for that program. Only, you know, 5% of the grant can be used for overhead. I'm only going to give it to you in 1 year increments. You know, you have to submit all kinds of lengthy reports. You know, there's all these restrictions and expectations that, you know, really make it hard for nonprofits to do their work, because it's hard to do it in a piecemeal fashion. And it's hard to do it when you're not allowed to invest in yourself. And so what donors have done instead, many of them have done instead, is say to nonprofits, hey, you know, we need you to respond to this crisis. So literally, like, here's $10,000. You don't even have to apply for it. Like, just show up. There's a check waiting for you at the office, you know, and we trust you to use it however you need to. They're removing restrictions. So they're saying to the nonprofit, you know, I know you wanted to support, you know, you have a program of early childhood education, and we were funding you to fund the teachers in the classroom. Now that that's not physically possible, you can use the money for however you want. So you can navigate through this crisis. We trust you. We trust your leadership. And many are also saying, you know, instead of writing a report at the end of all this, just, you know, we'll call you when the crisis is over. We'll take the notes and submit the report for you. So I think there's been a lot of flexibility that funders are showing. And hopefully that'll stick once this crisis is over.
I appreciate it. This was helpful. I want to ask you a follow-up question. I think this is something that we've seen, and let's hope we should not see more of those things where there's like immediate need after, you see it after hurricanes, you see it after any type of natural disaster as well, where all those funds pop up and then automatically to that, the other side, all these causes or organizations pop up. Question is, how do we make sure that if somebody wants to give, that even they're not just giving by emotion based on what just happened, even based on what's happening, they're giving it in the right form and also for the right places within this issue. We need to say, what are any mistakes you see, you know, philanthropists do by giving during a crisis and not maximizing their donation dollars?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad you asked that. There are lots of mistakes. In fact, I wrote a guide that might be useful for your audience, your listeners. It's called literally 6 Mistakes Philanthropists Make in a Crisis and What They Can Do Differently. And you can download it at 6crisismistakes.com.
What would be the one or two from those 6 that you feel that it's important to share now?
Right. Well, one is to the exact same point that you just mentioned, which is there's people respond to an immediate need. You know, there's a fire, a wildfire, or a hurricane, or a earthquake or a pandemic or whatever, and your gut is to like offer immediate response funding, which of course is important because people need shelter, you know, they need safety, they need food. But there are really generally four phases to any crisis, and it's important to ensure that there's philanthropic response to all four phases. And so you think about not just the immediate response, but also the recovery phase. So, you know, the rebuilding phase and the resilience phase. And you want to think about, you know, well, let's take the pandemic. So there's an immediate need of like kids don't have access to the internet or access to a device with which to connect to their teachers in their classroom remotely. And so that's an immediate need. So you might want to get tablets and, you know, broadband available to families immediately. But there's a larger issue going on, which is the fact that we have this huge digital divide in this country and, you know, other places around the world where kids don't have access to technology. And that puts them further behind from their peers in terms of their learning and their proficiency and their skills development for when they become adults and are in the workforce. And this is especially true in rural areas, as well as in many urban areas. And so that's a larger, like, systemic issue that needs to be addressed. It's not a quick fix, but it's something that needs to be tackled. And then, of course, we need to build in resiliency so that, you know, we are able as a community, as a city, as a country, to respond quickly to crises. And, you know, obviously that goes for business leaders. So we have those systems in place as well.
Mm-hmm. In general, about philanthropy, based on you've been in this for quite some time now, obviously there was always philanthropists, you know, going back decades and decades of people coming in and giving and changing and really making a difference. Have you seen trends as far as more of those is happening, less is that happening? Obviously, we see a lot more people with money and large corporations that actually, you know, give away parts of their profits to nonprofits. But what have you seen as far as trends, as far as where this is going?
Yeah, you know, I see a few different trends. One is, you know, that there's a growth of different kinds of giving vehicles, meaning, you know, obviously you can give through writing a check or, you know, making some kind of online donation. But also you can give by, of course, starting a foundation, which is increasingly easier to do in the sense that there are lots of organizations, financial wealth advisors, consulting firms even that are able to help you to literally start, create a foundation and run it. But also there's donor advised funds. And these are, you know, you think of them as like a charitable checking account. So you can open up this fund, a donor advised fund. Today, at least you can get an immediate tax deduction by, you know, allocating, let's say $5,000 or, you know, $500,000, whatever the amount is, into this fund. And then you can use that account to support different nonprofit organizations. And the benefit is that there is another entity, another organization that's managing it for you. So this could be like your local community foundation. You can open up your donor advised fund through a community foundation. And the benefit of that is that's a local organization that really knows the community well, knows the nonprofits, and can help you figure out which are the right organizations to support in your area. Or, you know, you could also open it through a larger commercial fund like Fidelity Charitable or Schwab Charitable or Vanguard Charitable. What they'll do is they'll help you with the transaction. So they can, to some degree, help you figure out which organizations to support, but they also manage all the taxes. They manage the account. They literally issue the payments. They handle all the paperwork. So it's an option that allows donors to, you know, it makes it easier to give in many ways. And there's been a huge increase in donor advised fund, people opening those accounts and funding that's being issued, especially this year during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that I've seen tremendously, you know, on a local level is those crowdfunding, which is those literally collecting money from smaller donors, but a ton of donors at a time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been the use of technology has been phenomenal in terms of increasing, you know, the ability of people to identify organizations, to support them, and, you know, certainly through tactics like crowdfunding. Another huge growth has been Giving Tuesday, which I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of, which is an annual day. We just had it in early December. And this is a global phenomenon, I guess I'd say. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an organization that's a nonprofit that's running it, but you know, it's really a day to encourage giving. And again, they had a record-breaking year. On top of, they actually created an extra Giving Tuesday, a Giving Day earlier in the pandemic, just to help people find ways to give and help nonprofits to receive additional funding. So that's been another growing trend.
Okay, so let's speak about the nonprofits. We at PTX Group work with a lot of nonprofits, especially on a local level, but some of them are national or even international organizations, a lot of organizations in Israel as well. I want to speak about those, you know, everybody wants to increase their fundraising and not only increase the fundraising, try to connect to those larger donors and see how they could get money from those larger donors. Let's start to where you want to take this as far as what do you see? How does a nonprofit need to be positioned and what level of clarity do they need to have in order to actually gain the trust and the dollars from those foundations or philanthropists in general?
Yeah, I'd say nonprofits need three things. One is a strategy. Two is sufficient like capacity and infrastructure as an organization. And the third is an abundance mindset. And so let me talk about each of those. And
sure.
I also talk about them in my latest book, which is called Delusional Altruism. And if your listeners want to learn more, they can learn more in the book. But, you know, first of all, I think having clarity on your strategy is super important because it allows you to align your entire organization, your nonprofit, your business, your foundation, whatever, toward what's most important. And it gives you a framework for making decisions that are congruent with where you want your nonprofit or your organization to go. And I think, you know, too often we think, you know, strategic planning is this lengthy, cumbersome exercise and, you know, data gathering and writing of documents and theories of change and all this stuff. But I think, you know, especially today, we don't have the luxury of waiting a year to create a five-year plan, right? Because by the time the year's up, the world will have changed, you know, twice. Mm. And so I really advise people to quickly create a strategy based on the information they currently have available to begin implementing it immediately and use it for as long as it makes sense, and then to adapt it and change it quickly as conditions change around them. And I also just wrote this guide that your listeners might be interested in. It's called 8 Things Every Philanthropist Can Do to Change the World, Even When the World Keeps Changing. And they can download it at 8things.org. But it's applicable, again, not only to philanthropists, but to nonprofits and businesses as well. And it really provides kind of a, you know, 8 easy steps you can take to quickly create a plan that you can count on, even when it feels like the conditions all around us keep changing, so that you have, as an organization, clarity as to where you're headed. You can align your team, your people, your systems toward what's most important, your top priorities for achieving your strategy in the next 12 months. And you can do it with the confidence of knowing that you can change course quickly, right? Because things are going to change, right? The world is always uncertain. Disruption is the status quo. And, you know, but you can build in time, literally in your calendar, to check in on your progress and see what's changed. And do you need to adapt or abandon anything or add anything? So I think having that strategy is important, not only to guide your own work, but as a nonprofit, to convey to your funders what you're trying to do and how they can help you. And when your funders know that you're clear on where you're headed and you have a plan for getting there, it's much easier for them to understand where they fit and how they can help you to achieve that. The second thing I mentioned is, you know, really building your capacity, your organizational infrastructure. And I think, you know, the nonprofits that are succeeding right now, you know, that entered this crisis and were able to keep going, to pivot, to persevere, in many cases, either surviving, which is quite frankly a big accomplishment, honestly, keeping the doors open is a big accomplishment, but many are thriving and innovating. And I think it's those who had strong organizations going into the crisis, meaning they had a strategy, they had good financial management systems. Think of how important it was for a business, for a nonprofit, to be able to quickly get PPP loans or, you know, EIDL or, you know, federal loans you had to have your financial management in order, right? You had to be able to quickly access your financial documents. You had to know your cash flow. And if you didn't have all that at the ready, then you were scrambling to figure it out, right? And that cost you a lot of critical time and delays and stress on your team and yourself. And so, you know, again, having that infrastructure, having a good fund development apparatus in place, a great way to communicate, obviously communication, investments in technology, obviously really important these days, the ability to evaluate yourself and so that you can know what's working and what's not working in your services so that you can make changes and improvements. You know, all of these things are really important. And to the point that you made earlier, many at the beginning of this podcast, is they're all just as important for a nonprofit as they are for a business. But too often, nonprofits don't believe that they need to invest in themselves. And funders don't believe that those investments are important. There is this kind of misguided scarcity mindset in the nonprofit and philanthropic sector that I also write about in the book, Delusional Altruism, where it's this misguided belief that nonprofits should somehow maintain a Spartan operation, right? That all of the resources need to go to, like, quote unquote, help people. And overhead is bad. Paying your staff decent salaries is bad. Investing in yourself is bad. It's all bad, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes no sense, because if you have a cause that you believe in, you know, teens at risk, and you find an organization that's doing great work, you know, mentoring or job training for teens or whatever it is, don't you want them to be as successful as possible? Don't you want them to, you know, have top talent, a great strategy, you know, good financial management, a great board of directors, a good way to communicate and do outreach? Of course you do. But all of that takes investment. And just like a business, you know, you and I understand the importance of marketing and investments in our teams, in our professional development, in a good bookkeeping and accounting, in technology upgrades, whatever it might be, right? So mm-hmm. we have to invest in ourselves in order to be successful, and nonprofits need to do that too. And then the third point is really this notion of abundance, this abundance mindset. And again, part of it is this abundance, this belief that nonprofits need to invest in themselves. Even funders, philanthropists, need to embrace this abundance mindset of the confidence that, you know, even you as a funder need to invest in yourself, your own learning, your own relationship development. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the abundance mindset for a nonprofit also is recognizing that, you know, you're a peer of your donor. So yeah, your donor might have $1 million or $1 billion, but not to let that intimidate you, because, you know, you as a nonprofit leader have assets, talents, knowledge, experience that, you know, maybe nobody else has, and your mm-hmm. donor probably doesn't have, right? And they're relying on you to meet their mission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a company, foundation, a donor might have a mission to reduce poverty in their community or help kids get a high quality education, but they're not the ones teaching the kids. You know what I mean? They're not the ones helping the kids get into college. They're funding the nonprofit to do that. They're funding nonprofits to help you help them meet their mission. And so there you are, the solution to their problem, right? The solution to meeting their mission. And I think you have to have, like, this abundance mindset of confidence and recognition of the value that you bring. Because otherwise it feels like, you know, you're asking for a handout, and you're not. You know, nonprofits are providing tremendous value to our communities, to our country, and to the world. And, you know, I think that abundance mindset is really important for all nonprofits to realize.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let me ask you a follow-up question to that is, an organization, let's say that they do have a clear, like, they know the cause, they're passionate about it, they do know, you know, they have a nice operation behind it, and currently they are, let's say, you know, the income, but let's call it the donor pool, are local people that know the organization, and that's how they are being supported in order to be able to change society and give for those needy or whatever cause it is. What's the process of them starting to reach out, a, you know, to grants, to foundations, in order to be able to get in front of those people, so to speak?
Well, you know, I think it's always important to have a fund development plan and to have, and with that, you know, I would, it's hard to distinguish fund development, quite frankly, from communications and marketing, because a lot of it is, you know, how you're positioning yourself to funders, and, you know, kind of the story that you're telling about what the need is and how you as the nonprofit are helping to meet that need and the ways that donors can support you. So I think, you know, the first thing is to create that plan. And of course, the second thing is to execute on it. But, you know, I'd say a couple of things. One is think about diversifying your donors. So if you're currently relying on a lot of individual donations, think about, well, who are the foundations, family foundations, community foundations, corporate companies in your community that you could also tap to try to reach out to them. And one good source of information, really, I would say the best database in the country on this, is through an organization called Candid, C-A-N-D-I-D .org would be the website. And they have, I believe it's called Foundation Directory Online. So it's an online directory of, you know, really all foundation grants, corporate and private foundations. So you can search, there's a fee, but it's not that much. And you can search by geography, issue, type of funder, you know, whatever, to identify potential funders that are funding in your topic or maybe funding in your community, so you can seek support from them. And that organization also offers a lot of great training for nonprofits to learn about proposal writing and fund development and other aspects of running a nonprofit. So I'd really, they're a really good organization, and I'd encourage listeners who work with nonprofits to look into that as a resource. And then the flip side, of course, if most of your donations come from foundations, you know, organizations, and think about how do you reach out to individual donors. The third is I'd really try to, you know, figure out ways to be innovative in terms of raising awareness and raising funds virtually, because, you know, I think we're going to be in this virtual reality for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen organizations be very successful. One that I reference a lot is the Providence Ballet Company in Providence, Rhode Island, mm-hmm. which I personally knew nothing about, except a colleague of mine is on their board and he reached out. They had organized a virtual gala on Zoom and invited me to participate, and, you know, with it through a donation. And, you know, it was a great experience to be on a Zoom call with the executive director and several of the dancers and learning about the ballet and, you know, watching a clip of a dance and hearing from the dancers themselves about their experience as ballet dancers. You know, they were just talking from their kitchen, you know, like the rest of us were. And it was a great way to connect. And they ended up raising, I believe, about $50,000 that weekend of this virtual gala. They have since, you know, obviously people can't go into the theater, but they've since created performances in parking lots. I believe they're running the Nutcracker right now, even though it's cold outside. Oh, wow. You know, because it's important to make sure that you continue to be top of mind, that you continue to add value, mm-hmm. and you continue to get in front of your donors and your clients, your customers, so that you can stay relevant. And quite frankly, when things change, because they will, this pandemic is not going to last forever, then you want to be, you know, the organization, the nonprofit, that the business really that people turn to when the crisis abates and things calm down a bit.
Got it. One final question as we're getting towards the end. What would be, if you don't mind sharing, like, what is the largest amount of money you were involved in that transaction between the two parties?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I would say, well, probably $20 million. Would be the largest, yeah, between an organization that had a windfall of resources, mm-hmm. a company, and chose to give extra away that year.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's close with the four rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Oh, sure.
Number one, a book that changed your life.
Million Dollar Consulting by Alan Weiss.
Number two, a piece of advice you got that you'll never forget.
Ooh, that's a good one. I'd say a piece of advice from my mom, which was, you know, just to be yourself and not really worry about what anyone else thinks of you.
Yeah, you can never go wrong if you share a piece of advice of your mom. Number three, anything you wish you could go back and do differently?
No.
Great. Number four and final question, what's still on your bucket list to achieve?
Ooh, well, my husband and I have 5 children, the youngest of which are 10. So we're looking forward to, although I will miss them tremendously when they go to college, we're looking forward to a time when we don't have any other responsibilities and we can buy or rent a large boat and travel down the Mississippi.
Beautiful. For links, resources mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes at www.ptechgroup.com/podcast, where we'll link to the book that was mentioned and ultimately the guides as well. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. I know your time is valuable, and that is why, in the name of our listeners, we will forever be grateful for sharing some of your time with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks. And that's a wrap for today's episode of the Let's Look Business podcast. I hope you enjoyed the practical, no-nonsense advice that our guests shared. If you found value in listening, I would be so grateful if you could share the episode with your friends, and if you could give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever platform you listen. Subscribe to the show and get notified every time we publish a new episode. The Let's Look Business podcast is a PTX Group original production. Until next time, make it a great day.